Well, it's a great day, and I'm glad you're here. Are you guys excited? We're starting a new series, by the way, in case you haven't heard. It's called The New Artists, and I'm excited about this. In fact, speaking of artists, this little mini documentary that you just saw, that was really a fun project for us. We had a great time sitting down with these artists, these friends of mine, and many of who are actually a part of this community here, The Orchard. And, you know, it's interesting, though, because I think the greatest challenge in producing this piece for me was trying to narrow down all this amazing conversation in about a, well, it was originally going to be 2 minutes, but I changed the thing and made it three, because there were so many great things that were said. I mean, these artists, they talked a lot about, you know, art and creativity. They talked about life, period. You know, they talked about those things that inspire them, you know, that awaken them and that motivate them and drive them to do the things they do, to create. And they also talked about some of the challenges they face as artists. The voice of resistance that works really hard and constantly whispers into their ear things like, what in the world do you think you're doing? I mean, really, who do you think you are? You think you have something worth showing people? You think you have something worth sharing? Who do you, in the heck do you think you are? Right, it's that voice of fear that tries to convince them before they even start, oftentimes, that they're wasting their time, and in the end that they're going to fall flat on their face and they're going to fail. But it's interesting because not only did they share with me what some of their challenges are, but they also shared about how in the midst of those fears, how they continue to push themselves. How they continue to show up, how they continue to create and to take risks and to make great art. And sometimes it's not easy, because even though those fears can seem so intimidating, they can seem so, so real, and those threats can seem so overwhelming. But what's interesting is that for these artists, what feels even more real and what feels even more true to them is the responsibility they have to do something with this gift that they have been given. It is this sense of responsibility that I have been given a gift of creativity, and my responsibility is to use that gift. And you know, ultimately, I think that is exactly what this series, The New Artist, really is all about. I think it's about embracing that gift of creativity, of imagination, of artistry that I believe exists within each and every one of us. That exists regardless of, well, let's just go down the list here, regardless of what it is you do for a living, regardless of what kind of training or schooling you may have or not have, regardless of what resources you may or may not have, even regardless of your ability to, I don't know, dance or sing or paint or build or whatever it might be. I believe regardless of all of that, there is an artist within every single one of us. And so in many ways, this series is going to be about awakening ourselves, awakening that inner artist. It's going to be a series about how to embrace the spirit of imagination, the spirit of creativity, the spirit of imagination, of sensitivity. It's going to be about waking up. It's going to be about waking up to who we, well, when you think about it, we were born into this world believing we were artists, right? And so it's about returning back to what we used to believe about ourselves until eventually we knew better. There's an artist that I want to introduce you to. His name is Ai Weiwei. I know you want to say his name. Ai Weiwei. Say it. Ready? Ai Weiwei. Some of you maybe have heard of this artist. He's from China. And he's a sculptor. He's an architect. He's a curator, a photographer, a filmmaker, all kinds of things. And he has a very interesting story. Some of you might remember this building here. This is a pretty amazing structure. How many of you have seen this before? Isn't that absolutely amazing? So I was actually asked by the Chinese government a few years ago to be sort of the official artistic consultant when it came time to design and build the Beijing National Stadium for the 2008 Olympics. It's really quite a building. Well, anyway, if you know anything about this guy's story, one of the things you'll know is that I has had some tremendous difficulty when it's come to the Chinese government. Because what's happened is, as he has sort of gained influence as an artist, and as he has developed sort of this platform, what I has started to do is he has begun actually using that platform and using his influence to openly express his criticism towards the Chinese government's stance on things like democracy and human rights. And if you know anything about China, that's not really very welcomed there. In fact, if you get a chance, there's a documentary that you really have to see about this guy's life. It's called Never Sorry. And it's very, very well done. It's very shocking. I mean, it really gets your attention. Maybe some of you have seen it. I encourage you to check it out. But anyway, it documents sort of what I has been through over these last few years as a result of his, I guess you could say, his stance and his outspokenness of the Chinese government, and how he's been, one of the things the Chinese government did was they installed a camera outside of his house so that they can monitor pretty much every movement this guy makes. He's been arrested numerous times. He's been beaten. He's been detained. In fact, one quick story I'll share with you. Around 2010, I built a brand new art studio. It was actually a very, very huge space, beautiful space. And he did this sort of as a, he was encouraged by a government official to pursue this and to do this as a way to sort of help shape and grow the art culture in this part of Shanghai. And so, you know, he went to work, builds this beautiful space, and they get it all completed. And as soon as they're completed, well, one day the Chinese government decides that this building is illegal. And so one night, middle of the night, Chinese government shows up completely unannounced and demolishes the entire building. Loses it all. And then it wasn't long after that, I think it was maybe 2 or 3 months after that, that I suddenly went missing for about 3 months. Just gone, off the radar. No one heard from him, no one knew what was going on. And after that time, it turned out that he had been arrested and detained and subjected to quite a bit of psychological torture by the Chinese government. It's really quite a story. If you get a chance to watch the documentary, I think it'll be pretty impacting for you. But I think that is at times the nature of art, isn't it? I mean, in many ways, you could say it's the nature of artists. I mean, there's something about art that takes us places. I mean, there's something about art that has a way of sort of dragging us. And disrupting us, oftentimes regardless of whether we really want to go there or not, it takes us into places and into spaces that the majority of us would never otherwise explore. You know, if you think about certain street artists, like people like Banksy, or Princess Hijab, or Shepard Fairey is another one. I mean, these artists, even pieces like Picasso's Guernica, it got the world's attention. It opened the world's eyes to the devastation of the Spanish Civil War back in the 1930s. I mean, art does something. I mean, it takes us on a journey, and it often lands us like smack dab in the middle of paradox, doesn't it? And it angers us sometimes, it soothes us, it frustrates us, it calms us, it infuriates us, it inspires us, it pisses us off, all at the same time, often, right? And yet, it's in the middle of all that paradox, and it's in the middle of all that tension that we are oftentimes given the most beautiful gift imaginable. It's in that place that we are often given fresh lenses, fresh perspectives, new narratives that tell stories in ways that impact how we perceive and how we, well, not just perceive, but how we actually engage with this world around us. And that's why, ultimately, art matters. And I guess in some ways, this is exactly what I hope this series does for us. I hope and I pray that this series over these next few weeks it will disrupt us. And that it will drag us into a place of paradox, a place of tension. And I'm hoping that there's going to be times when you're sitting here and you're going to feel inspired, but I'm also hoping there's going to be times that you feel a little bit frustrated. And I'm hoping there's times that you feel very motivated, and I hope there's also times that you might even feel a little angry. But that's okay. Because again, it's in those spaces that quite often it's exactly there where something really beautiful and very transformative takes place. Now, here's the thing. You know, opening up a series called The New Artists, well, you would think that maybe a good starting point for us would be to explore the very basic question of what the heck is an artist? I mean, what does it mean to be an artist? But I got to tell you, as I began sort of exploring this, and this is a topic that I've been, chewing on and writing about for a long time, but as I begin to really process this, and especially this talk in particular, what I quickly began to realize was that, well, I think that certainly is a great question, what is an artist? And we'll go there, we'll work through that a little bit at another time, but I think as good of a question as that is, I don't think it's necessarily the best question for us to start with. No, in fact, I think there's actually even a better question or more significant, more important question that I think we really ought to dive into, and it's this one right here. It's not what does it mean to be an artist? It's this question: what does it mean to be human? I mean, what does it mean to be a human being? Right? Who are we? And why in the heck are we even here? What does it mean to be human? We're going to explore that in just a moment, but first I want you to watch this.
Climate change,
deadly earthquake,
a suicide bomber,
terrorism,
nuclear device in the heart of the nation's capital.
It's no wonder that we're pessimistic. It's no wonder that people think that the world is getting worse. But perhaps that's not the case.
Perhaps we forget that we've only just begun.
Doing what's never been done before is intellectually seductive, whether or not we deem it practical.
What we're seeing is unfathomably new possibilities all of a sudden becoming available to us.
The future doesn't belong to the faint-hearted. It belongs to the brave.
You have to trust in something. Your gut, destiny, life, karma, whatever.
We truly are living in an extraordinary time. And many people forget this.
So now technically your device is on. Can you hear me?
The yearning to do what we do in the service of something larger than ourselves.
Where did we come from? Are we alone in the universe? What is the future of the human race?
When you conduct those exercises, innovation follows just as day follows night.
We can do this. I know we can because we've done it before.
Stay hungry, stay foolish.
That's good. So then let's go back to this question. What does it mean to be human? Who are we as human beings? Now, I think this is a pretty important question. I think it's important on so many different levels. I think it's important, especially for those of us who are followers of Jesus. And the reason I say that is because, you know, when we look at the life of Jesus, And I mean, his whole life. I mean, when you really take into consideration the fact that, you know, here God came down and he moved right into our neighborhood. He came and he lived among us. That's incarnation, right? And he lived with us and among us. And he comes here as both human and divine. And what we see through all of this, what we see through his life, what we see through his death, his resurrection, what we see even in his ascension, what we see through all of this is, like, I think this perfect picture of what it looks like to live in our fullest potential as whole human beings. See, I think probably what's happened is that, and I think this is sort of the problem, is that many of us, we've done a fairly decent job of looking to Jesus as, well, you know, as our Savior. We've done a fairly good job of looking to Jesus as our Lord, as a, I don't know, maybe for some, a miracle worker. For some, you may see Jesus as just a teacher or whatever it is you see, or as God's son or whatever it might be. But I wonder how many of us have truly looked to Jesus as a sort of icon or as an example of what it truly means to be and to live in the fullness of our potential as human beings. I think a lot of us, we just don't see Jesus that way. I mean, we're much safer if we keep Jesus in sort of the divine category, right? Because the more human we make Jesus, the more it actually demands of us. And so I think what's happened is it's like we've looked everywhere except to Jesus. To gain an understanding or to gain our idea and to answer the kind of questions like, who are we and why are we here? And so what's happened is, as a result, it's like we've sold ourselves short. And we've come to accept this definition of humanity that is far below what God intended when he created us. You know, we look at ourselves, we look at some of our behavior, we look at some of our actions, and we say, well, that's just being human. Well, hold on a second. Are you sure? See, it's like we've become, I think, much more fluid, sort of existing as maybe human doings instead of living fluidly as human beings, right? The word that comes to mind, This is a big word. This is a tough word. It's a word that none of us really would ever want to use for ourselves. But the word that comes to mind, I think this is a good one because it slaps us a little bit. It gets our attention, is the word dehumanize. Dehumanize. You know what dehumanize means? Here's the definition. To deprive of human qualities such as individuality, compassion, or civility. Is it possible that we've done this to ourselves? I mean, is it possible that we have forgotten who we really are? And as a result of forgetting who we really are, we in turn have also forgotten who others, who on one hand might seem very different than us, but who on another hand are actually a lot like us. I mean, is it possible that in the result of dehumanizing ourselves, well, the way it plays out is in our dehumanization of others? I mean, who are we as human beings? There's an author, his name is Matthew Fox. He's actually an Episcopalian priest. I know some of you ladies were bummed out because you're Matthew Fox. You're thinking Lost or something, but anyway, so this Matthew Fox, he's an Episcopalian priest and a theologian, and he writes about this whole idea in a book entitled Creativity. It was written several years ago, and one of the things he says and that he believes is that if we're not sure of who we are, then we might at least begin by looking at who we are not. And in our journey of that, and in our naming of who we are not, we somehow begin to circle around to explore who it is we truly are. And so one of the things he does in his book that I think is so good, he gives a handful of sort of, that they just feel like very bold declarations. And so I think they're outstanding, and so I actually want to share them with you, and I want to give you what he says in this book, the way he declares these in terms of really who we are as human beings and who we are not. So if you have a pen, you might want to write these down. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on each of these, but listen, these are the kinds of things that I think will begin to move us away from dehumanizing ourselves and into a place of, and the word I'm liking right now is the word rehumanize. We can rehumanize ourselves, and as we rehumanize ourselves, we can take part in rehumanizing others. And I mean, imagine a world where people are walking and moving towards their full potential as human beings. I mean, that's really a beautiful vision. And so let me give you this first one. Now, these have to do with who we are at our core. Don't think behavior, because, you know, it'll mess with you a little bit if you think of it that way. This is about who we are at the core. Here's the first one. Are you ready? First one, we are not consumers. Say that with me. Ready? We are not consumers. Now, did you know that for our vast majority of time here on Earth, our species did not buy most of its stuff, right? I mean, you do realize, right? We did not buy our food, we did not buy our clothing, our shelter, we did not buy our education, we did not buy our medical healing. Instead, what did we do? Well, I'll tell you, we chased down our food. Right, we went after it. We skinned rabbits and deer and buffalo, and we made clothes out of those things. Right, we found caves to live in. We built shelters and we carved things and limbs and buffalo bones and we sought out plants that could bring healing into our bodies. Think about that. I mean, for 98% of our existence as hunter-gatherers, okay, we did not consume. We created. And do you know why we created? We created because that is how God designed us. Let me show you something. Genesis chapter 1, verse 27. Do you have your Bible reading voice ready to go? Because I want you to read this with me. Ready? Genesis chapter 1, verse 27. Let's read together. Here we go. God created human beings. He created them godlike, reflecting God's nature. He created them male and female. Next verse. God blessed them, prosper, reproduce, fill earth, take charge, be responsible for fish in the sea and birds in the air and for every living thing that moves on the face of the earth. It is a call into action. It is a call into creativity. Now, I'm not suggesting that we all leave here and go take up hunting. I'm better off not really messing around with guns. And I'm not going to say why. We'll save that for another one. And I'm not suggesting we all go out and try to make our own clothes. Some of you actually look like you tried. No, I'm joking. I'm not suggesting that we start living in caves or anything like that. Okay, here's the fact. Things are different today. Do you realize that back in the day, okay, people were forced to think creatively. They had to be creative, right? They had to think creatively about their food. They had to think creatively about their clothes and where they're going to live. And I mean, they had to. It was a matter of living, right? I think in many ways, like, that was a very good thing. But times are different, right? Times are different, and so now we live in a time where we're sort of forced to consume, right? I mean, we have to in order to live. I mean, we consume at some level every day of our lives, and that's not a bad thing. So I don't think the question is like, oh no, is consuming bad? Is it bad or is it good to consume? I think the greater question is really like, is that why we're here? Like, is that? Is that really who we are? I mean, are we here to be consumers? Is consuming the essence of who we are as human beings? See, because for most of our existence, we were makers, not consumers. I mean, we were hunters and we were gatherers. We were not consumers. Let me go to the next one. Second one is this. We are not addicts. Say that with me. We are not addicts. Now, of course, addiction is very real. And, you know, we all probably have some type of addiction in our lives, right? Of some sort. I mean, addiction is everywhere in our culture, in all kinds of forms. We don't have time to get into. I mean, think about how hard, for example, some companies work so hard at getting us addicted to their products. Oh man, they work so hard, right? And you know, one thing is certain is that there are some very powerful forces that are making huge profits by getting us addicted to their stuff. Huge profits by getting people addicted. And then, of course, there's all kinds of other addictions, right? There's the ones we hear more about, alcohol addiction, drug addiction. There's sex addiction. There is codependent relationship addiction. And do you know there's even religious addiction? I mean, it's funny because people just, they swap their addictions, don't they? I mean, you know, people can walk out of a codependent relationship and then join a church and become codependent on the church. I mean, it happens, right? People get addicted to all kinds of things. Addicted to money, get addicted to power, and all kinds of things. But if you stop for a second and you think about what it is that's at the core of addiction, what you realize is that addiction is really about some type of habit that sort of takes us over, right? It's about some sort of habit that dictates, and by the way, I learned this past week, the word dictate comes from the same Latin word as addiction. Think about that, huh? I mean, it's like these habits dictate to us what we ought to be eating and drinking and smoking and you know, doing and relating to and all this stuff. Listen to this quote from the author. He says this, "We are a species and indeed a civilization very prone to dictatorships, that is to addiction. It is as if we want to turn our power over to others." We're very quick at doing that. You do realize that. We're very quick to turn the powers over to others. I mean, so I think the question that's worth asking ourselves is this one. If we were creative, would we be so addicted? I mean, because if you think about it, listen, this is really important. Creativity and addiction are polar opposites. They come from two totally different places. Right? I mean, think about this for a second. Addiction is always an external referent, isn't it? It's always, it comes from the something out here, we take it in. Whereas creativity, on the other hand, is just the opposite. Creativity comes from within, and it goes inside out. You see, huge difference. Creativity comes from a very different place than where addiction comes from. And that's why when you have a real addictive society, man, you have a society that does not encourage creativity at all. Or if they encourage it, it's creativity and art or whatever you want to call it that is pretty neutral or makes them look good, right? I mean, just ask Ai Weiwei. So who are we as human beings? We are not consumers. We are not addicts. Here's the next one. And I know right when I say this, there are going to be some of you who disagree with this because you think the person sitting next to you is this. We are not passive couch potatoes. Come on, you got to say it with me. Ready? We are not passive couch potatoes. No, no, no. We are people. Listen, we are people who initiate. We are people who initiate ideas. We are people who initiate movements. We are people who initiate inventions. We are people who initiate, babies, you know. We are people who initiate exercise. Some are, anyway. We are people who initiate all kinds of things. And do you know why we're initiators at our core? It's because the other thing that is at our core is this thing called curiosity. Curiosity. There is within us a yearning to wonder. I mean, look, those of you who have little kids, curious like crazy, right? Why, Dad? Why? Hey, shh. Why? But why? What? Shh, shut your mouth. Hey, where's the duct tape? No, don't ever do that. I don't do that. I'm just, again, I say that on the recording. I do not do that. Anyway, but you know, our kids have this wonder, right? This curiosity. But over time, we sort of let go of that. See, it's no wonder that Jesus constantly called us back to being like little children. Right? There is at our core this longing to be amazed. There is at our core an eagerness to grow and to learn and to be excited and to be expressive and to be alive. That's who we are. I love it when you read the Psalms, there's these certain ones that just sort of pop out, and it just has you get the sense that like the psalmist was writing out of this place of feeling truly alive and awake. Psalm 108, 1 and 2, this is one that I love reading this in the mornings when I get up early, because you'll see in a second. Psalm 108, verse 1, psalmist says, "My heart, O God, is steadfast. I will sing and make music with all my soul. Awake, harp, and lyre." Now listen, "I will awaken the dawn." I love that. I will awaken the dawn. Say that with me. I will awaken the dawn. Man, like when's the last time like you woke up in the morning and it's still dark outside and you were like, "I am here to awaken the dawn." You should try it. Try it tomorrow morning. Monday morning is a great time of the day, time of the week to do that, all right? I will awaken the dawn. We are not passive couch potatoes, okay? It is not who we are. It is not who you are. And if you find that you're becoming a passive couch potato, okay, well, then what that probably means is that you're depressed or that you're stuck in a rut or something like that. But that does not mean that that's who you are, and it does not mean that that's who you were created to be. All right, it is not who you are at the core. Here's the next one. As human beings, we are not boring. Look around this room. Just look around. We are not boring, folks. Now, granted, when you sit and stare at me like this sometimes, you look a little bored. But I know you're not bored. I know you're just really so deeply engaged that you don't even know how to have expression on your face. You're like so enthralled by what I'm saying that you actually fell asleep. It like sent you into a coma of some sort. Can that happen, Jess, doctor? Coma, okay, anyway. Listen, we are not boring. See, to be boring is to be uninteresting. Human beings are not uninteresting, okay? Sitting in the doctor office, listening to their crappy music while you're waiting and waiting, that's boring, okay? But human beings are not boring. If you doubt that, go to the mall today and just sit. So some of you see each other there. Let me read a quote from Fox's book. Listen, "Our music, our art, our dance, our theater, our ritual, our lovemaking. What is boring about that?" I know some of you are like, "Well, I'll tell you." That's why I'm excited to announce to you a new class that we're... No, I'm just joking. Some of you look so serious right now. You need to go and have sex. if you're in a biblical sense, I mean, okay. Gosh, I was reading a quote. That's all I was doing. Let me finish. All right. Sorry. Here we go. So some of you were actually, you heard sex. You're like, "Whoa, what?" All right. Let me keep going. Listen, he continues. This is a quote that I'm reading from him, okay? Here we go. "The architecture in our cities, the awesome buildings that defy gravity, the bridges that connect cities as they span the waters, the traffic patterns that amazingly work so that everyone finds their way home at night, the sewers and water lines and gas lines underneath our cities, the wildness of the myriad of peoples walking in the city streets, all with their places to go to or from, the churches and mosques and synagogues that depict our yearning for spirit and a wholeness that we feel estranged from, the good works of people dedicated to the sick, the hungry, the dying, the forgotten, the lonely, the imprisoned. We are not a boring species. Say what you will. And so, if we are not a boring species, we have no reason to be bored. Boredom is not your friend. See, because people who are interesting and people who do interesting things and who give birth to interesting realities and ideas aren't bored. Being awake is the opposite of being bored. At the core of who we are as human beings, right, we are not consumers. We are not addicts. We are not passive couch potatoes. We are not boring. And here's the next one. We are not lazy. Say it with me. We are not lazy. Now, sometimes it seems that we lack energy. But I think it's really more or less that we get sidetracked by all kinds of things that strip us of our excitement and of our appreciation and our gratitude towards life. Rabbi Abraham Heschel, he says this, humankind, some, maybe you've heard this before, humankind will perish not from lack of information, but from lack of appreciation. See, that's why when gratitude is flowing, there is this energy, isn't there? I mean, if you know people who just have this sense of gratitude and they walk around and they see life as a gift, man, there's energy there. I mean, a person with a posture, with a spirit of praise and of thanksgiving, they're not lazy. There's no laziness there because there's something about that. There's something about praise that awakens us, that extends itself. See, that's, I mean, think about when you come into church here and we sing together. And there's a lot of different ways to worship, but when we come together and we're singing songs of praise, do you realize you're not singing because they're really struggling up here and they need your help, right? They're perfectly capable of doing this with or without you, right? But it's not about that. This is about us. This is about us engaging. And sometimes we show up and we don't feel like singing to God, right? Because maybe, I don't know, you got in a fight with your wife on the way to church, or, you know, you yelled at your kid, you know, in the name of Jesus, and then maybe you kicked the dog on the way out the door, I gotta go to church, you know, and a cat goes flying, and so you're feeling kind of crappy, and you come in here, and it's, you know, hey, great is our God, and you're like, ugh. Dang it, man. Like I don't really want to sing and praise right now. Well, you know, that's okay. You don't have to feel like it because it really doesn't matter what you feel like. I mean, when you don't feel like worshiping or praising God, that doesn't mean that God is any less worthy of it. I mean, because you realize it really has nothing to do with you. I mean, this is about you offering to God and saying, God, I'm thankful for you. I'm thankful for your work in my life, for who you are. Man, see, so there's something in that. It prays, it extends itself, it sacrifices, it gives away. And see, that at the core is who every one of us are. A psalmist, man, I love it. Psalm 145, 21, another one. He says, my mouth will speak in praise. Why? Because that's who I am. My mouth will speak in praise of the Lord. You know, people praise the Lord. They don't even know they're praising the Lord. They walk in nature. They go, oh, wow. Woo. Dang. They even know they're praising the Creator. My mouth will speak in praise of the Lord. Let every creature praise His holy name forever and ever. It's who we are at our core. Another quote from Fox, at the heart of all creativity, there lies praise. There lies a hidden thank you, a yearning to return blessing for blessing. See, I think one way to look at gratitude is gratitude is like the ultimate enabler, right? I mean, it moves us from apparent laziness to this heroic and generous giving. And that's why gratitude is the ultimate prayer. And I love that quote from Meister Eckhart. He says, if the only prayer you say in your whole life is thank you, that would suffice. We are not lazy. Say it with me. We are not lazy. Here's the next one. Ready? We are not cogs in a machine. So for the past 300 years or so, this modern era, with all of its inventions and ideas and innovations, in many ways it's sort of left us with this idea that everything is a machine, right? Everything's a machine. The universe is a machine. Our bodies are machines, right? The earth and the sky are machines. And if God existed, then God is like the mechanic of all the machines. And he's the guy, you know, way out there with the oil can. And anytime things are going not so good, maybe he will come and he will put a little oil in there. He'll fix whatever he's got because he's got a little pager he wears. And it goes off and tells him, I got to get there, right? And he's running the machinery of the universe. Meanwhile, you know, at the same time, keeping tabs on all of your things going on. And you know, showing up when something breaks down and usually he's pretty PO'd. Right? And see, if that's the case, then what that means is that if everything is a machine, then we are nothing more than cogs in the machine. We're just pieces that just sort of happen to show up. And our main responsibility is to keep our mouth shut and to show up and to obey and to say yes to all the machines. To say yes to the machine, the economic machine, the political machine, the military machine, the religious machine, the educational machine, on down the list. See, the only problem is that it's inside of that machine that fear takes over and anxiety increases and over time things start getting cold and everything turns sterile and creativity eventually dies. Because the only way to survive the machine is by shrinking our souls. Learning to obey, learning to be quiet and to get out of its way. The only way. That is not what you were created for. That is not who you are at your core. We are not cogs in a machine. Last one. Are you ready? Okay. We are not destroyers. Say it with me. We are not destroyers. Now, human beings do destroy things, right? Your two-year-old destroys things. My five-year-old, my eight-year-old, my 13-year-old, they all destroy things. I destroy things, right? Right? We do destroy it, but do you know that it being, you know, it is not, how would I say it? Humans do destroy, but it is not of our essence to do so. Right? I mean, if you think about it, we choose to destroy. Destruction is a choice that we make. Right? The essence of our nature is to create, it is to build, it is to give birth, it is not to destroy. We see this, the love that a mother has for her child. Nothing like it. We see it in a similar way, even, that an artist has this love for this art that has come out of his or her pain, imagination, dreams. See, listen, ultimately, the challenge that we're faced with has to do, listen, this is so important, has to do with how these powers that we possess for creativity can be used for either one. We can use our creativity to bring beauty, or we can use our creativity to bring destruction. We can use our imaginations to think up and to dream up ways to kill more effectively or more efficiently, or we can use our imaginations to figure out how to bring about peace and goodwill. We see a destructive use of imagination around us all the time. All the time. And everything from the chemicals that we've invented that are seeping into our soil and into the foods that we're feeding our children. Man, we see it all around us. I mean, think about this for a second. What animals in this whole, you know, world, what animals do we know of that are destroyers? I don't mean like there's animals that might kill another species, but they don't destroy whole habitats of other species. Fox, in this book, he makes this great point. He says, you know, there seems to be a balance in the rest of nature that just seems to get out of control when it comes to humans. Why is that? Why? Well, the answer, I think, has to do with what is the, well, maybe there's more than one, but it has to do with what it might be one of our most unique features of our species, and that is this powerful thing called imagination. Creativity. It's in our creativity itself that lies at the essence of our humanity. And that creativity is so powerful that we can use it to create or we can use it to destroy. It's like in the scriptures where we're told, I place before you life and death, blessing and cursing, choose life, right? I mean, God, he's like, tells us which one to choose, right? Okay, A or B, choose A. See, that's what's placed before us. See, which also means that what stands in front of every single one of us every day is a choice. It is an everyday choice. It's a choice that shows up in the nitty-gritty, some of the most unspiritual details of our everyday lives. It shows up in the details of how I am parenting my two daughters and my son. It shows up in how you, as a grandparent, are investing in and loving and encouraging your grandchildren. It shows up in your work worlds. It shows up in your school worlds, in your, I mean, I don't know, your religious worlds, your economic world. It shows up in your business. It shows up in your politics. It shows up everywhere else in between. This is the power of creativity. And so I think in trying to answer this question we looked at earlier, what the heck does it mean to be human? Well, it seems to me that it's this word, creative. This word, creative. It might be the best word we have for what truly defines the essence of our humanity. See, which then also means that what we're talking about here is really important. This isn't just, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, creativity and imagination is not just like the icing on the cake, right? It's not just like a department in the church or some, you know, something that's just reserved for a select few who can paint or draw or dance or sing or whatever. No, listen, at the end of the day, this creativity and imagination that God has placed within us is absolutely integral to our sustainability as human beings. Because ultimately, what all this means, it's huge. To be human is to be creative.